Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Listen to this Acast show ad-free on Amazon Music with your Prime membership or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it's Tuesday, 7th of April. I'm Andy Brassel, she's Jules Breach, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
It's a quick, silly decision based on trying to save a few quid, and we're talking maximum. There was talk about, I think it's 750 grand a month, which even if it was 6 months, 12 months, it's not a problem for Liverpool to pay that money. Why should the government be paying that when football can pay it and look after itself when that money could be used elsewhere?
Hey Jules, how things today?
Not too bad, thanks, Andy. Yeah, it's been another... Can you believe we're in April already? It's been another week of living in quarantine, living in our homes and working from home. But yeah, it's been a bit brighter. The weather's been quite nice, hasn't it? So even though I've not really been outside, I've been trying to get as much sun on my face through my window in my little loft apartment, which has been... Yeah, it's been all right, hasn't it? How about you?
Yeah, well, everyone has their football milestones, don't they, of stuff they miss. And right about this time in April, it's normally Bayern versus Dortmund. So that's made me twitch a little bit. Of course, I think we've all sort of had to come to terms with life without any actual live football. But look, there's so much other stuff to talk about anyway. And one of the first things I wanted to talk about this week is Liverpool reversing their decision to put around 200 of their non-playing staff on furlough. Furlough is a word, it's probably the word of 2020, just like metatarsal was about 18 years ago when David Beckham got his cracked by Aldo Duscher of Deportivo La Coruña. Anyway, because there was a lot of criticism for Liverpool for looking for government assistance during the coronavirus crisis, when, of course, they're one of the richest clubs in the world. Well, in fact, they're the seventh richest club in the world, I think, by the last Deloitte Money League. And there are a lot of people upset by this. You had one of the supporters groups, the major supporters group, the Spirit of Shankly, coming out and asking Peter Moore, the chief executive, for an explanation for this, and talking about the damage this is causing to our club's reputation and values. That was the exact quote. You had a few local MPs having a go as well. And then Peter Moore on Monday, late on Monday, put out an open letter to Liverpool fans, and part of it said, "A range of possible scenarios were considered, including but not restricted to applying to the Corona job virus job retention scheme, which pays 80% of salary and guaranteeing the 20% payment, i.e. the other 20% that the non-playing staff would have been owed, applying to the Corona virus job retention scheme with a guarantee to reimburse monies received at a later date, and thirdly, finding an alternative means to cover our furlough costs." And anyway, he did say... He was truly sorry, and he thought it was a mistake, despite having warned of quite a big impact on the club finances, and that's the case for every club out there. I mean, Jules, it's not as if Liverpool were the only club in the Premier League who've sort of considered using this scheme, is it?
No, exactly. And look, I completely understand why there was such a backlash about Liverpool going with this decision in the first place. And I think that they had to reverse this decision, didn't they, after how much was said about it. It was inevitable that that decision was going to come. And I think rightly so. The interesting thing about all of this is, as you say, Andy, they weren't the first Premier League club to go to the job retention scheme put forward by the government. There have been other clubs that have done it that haven't received that backlash. I was doing a little bit of research, and it was quite clear to me there's about four other clubs that had actually taken part with the job retention scheme, haven't there, Andy? Why do you think it is that those clubs haven't received the same amount and the same level of backlash that Liverpool did?
Well, the other ones in the Premier League are Newcastle, Tottenham, Norwich and Bournemouth, as far as we're aware at the moment. I think part of it is the whole global dimension of Liverpool. And obviously that's something that's particularly prominent at the moment because they're so successful on the pitch with the Champions League and Premier League to follow. But I think without getting into huge generalisations about those other clubs, I think people are relatively suspicious of the ownership of Newcastle and Tottenham in particular, if we're being perfectly honest. And I think in a lot of cases, people have just rolled their eyes and gone, well, that's typical of the people who run that club. Although, if I'm not mistaken, from the Newcastle and Tottenham fans that I've spoken to, they're not that happy about what's happening either in terms of their club taking advantage of these schemes. And I do wonder, particularly with Tottenham, and we're talking about global profile, whether they will do something and whether they will come under public pressure to row back after that. But I think Liverpool are held to higher standards, if we're being honest, because they have this worldwide reputation, because they're in the top 10 richest clubs in the world. So there's a sense that they shouldn't really need the money. But then you look at how they brand, and you know, you look at the advertising boards around the pitch, and I was playing FIFA with my son yesterday, actually, and he was playing as Liverpool, and the little signs that they have on the advertising boards are incredibly accurate on FIFA, and that one that says "this means more" pops up all the time. And if you're going to frame yourself as that, well, it's a bit like Barcelona and Messi and club, more than a club. You've got to be prepared to live up to that if that's part of your branding.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think that because of that, that is why even fan supporter groups of Liverpool held the club to account on this issue as well, because they wanted to actually, you know, make a stand against this, because they clearly felt that it didn't follow the morals of what the club ordinarily kind of puts out there, if that makes sense, like you're explaining. And I think that what's come out of this really is that it feels more clear now from the football community that most people are in agreement that the job retention scheme that the government have put forward isn't really intended or designed for Premier League football clubs. But if that is the case, then surely that's the same for any other companies with a huge revenue or with employees earning more than £1 million a year. And then it's the government's job to maybe specify that that type of scheme shouldn't be used by those types of businesses, if that makes sense. And I think also one of the kind of morals to come out of this as well is that as football fans, we're all so passionate about our clubs that we support. And we also are very aware of how powerful our football clubs can be and the ability that our football clubs do have to set the tone and set an example. And I think that's probably why the Liverpool fans were so upset by the initial decision to furlough their staff, because they can see that if people then will accept that a company, a business as profit-making as Liverpool is, are going to take advantage of a scheme like this, then other businesses might then do the same. And that's not how Liverpool want their club to be perceived, especially in this situation right now. It's the lower league clubs that need that help. It's the health services that need that help. And we all know that everyone is suffering financially right now. Pretty much every single person I know, all of my mates, everyone I know, yeah, it's suffering financially in some way, whether that be small or large. But some businesses, and I of course include the top tier European football clubs in that, are able to take a hit and it not impact their business's existence.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. But I think the other thing we have to absorb, and the thing that Liverpool fans and particularly the spirit of Shankly have to be congratulated for, is the fact that you were saying how passionate we are about our football clubs, Jules. Yeah. We also, and this is something that we frequently see in fans crossing swords when they have something to criticise another club over, whether it be ticket prices or anything else, is the fact that we feel our football clubs reflect us. They reflect our personalities. And, you know, it's very important to those Liverpool fans how Liverpool are perceived nationally and globally. And that's something that means a lot to them. And I think people can take a lead from Liverpool fans here, actually, because, and the Liverpool fans who got involved in this and took the club quite rightly to task over this, because I think sometimes as football fans, we can see our clubs as reflective of ourselves, but not realise the power we have to bring them in line with what they feel, what we feel they should be. I think sometimes football fans, particularly in the UK and in England, don't recognise what power they have. And we're seeing it at the moment because, you know, people have got a bit of revulsion about the prospect of, for example, the Premier League or other leagues restarting without any fans in the stadium. Now, that's something that might be logistically impossible if clubs financially need to get this show on the road again sooner rather than later, and we'll have to see how that all pans out. But we forget sometimes, in a way that they don't forget in Germany, for example, the fact that for it to be a great television spectacle, the Premier League, the stadiums need to be full. The clubs need the fans a lot more than they publicly admit, and a lot more than they behave like they do at times. So that's something that I think really should be taken from this. And again, maybe Tottenham fans can take something from this, because it is really important, I think, for fans to realise the power they have and not be, like a lot of Premier League fans have been in the past, so blindly protective of their club. So I don't know, if I'm a Manchester United fan and I'm gone, all right, I had to pay 62 quid for Arsenal away. There seems to be a lot of whataboutery in that sort of situation, in that, you know, an Arsenal fan, for example, might respond in that situation. Well, other clubs' tickets cost a lot of money as well. And you think, well, hang about, this is about money that's coming out of your pocket as well. Mm. You know, what we've not been very good at, I think, as English football fans sometimes, is supporter unity. And this is a very, very good example of how if fans get together for what they feel is the right thing, they can actually change things and they can actually make things happen.
And that's exactly what they've done in this situation. I think fair play to Liverpool Football Club for listening to their supporters and acknowledging that they'd made the mistake. I think for some fans, it probably still has left a bit of a bad taste that they made the mistake in the first place. But I think moving on from it, at least the club listened and they got to the right answer eventually. And I think common sense has prevailed in the end here. Moving on, Andy, from the top of the Premier League and back down into the lower leagues of the football pyramid, because on last week's Jules and Andy, we talked extensively about the decision that was made for non-league football in steps 3 to 7 to end immediately with no promotion or relegation. And then we also then found out in between the last few days from the last show up until now that the National League have suspended their leagues indefinitely, just the same way that the Premier League and the rest of the Football League have done as well. So with that in mind, we thought we would speak to someone who was directly impacted by this. We got on the phone to Danny Searle, who is the Aldershot manager. Aldershot play in the National League. They're in 16th place at the moment, 4 points off the drop, and they've played 39 matches so far this season. And Danny spoke to us a little bit earlier, and he explained what the club are doing for the fans during this indefinite break.
Yeah, well, I was sitting around the other day, which I've been doing quite a lot recently, and I was thinking, I got off the phone to my father, and we'd had a great chat, and my partner, Claire, she was talking about me giving her dad a call because we like to talk about football, and I just thought, you know what, we was watching Anthony Deck Saturday Night Takeaway, and they were sitting on their sofas, and they're in isolation, and they're a weird pair, those two, because no matter what they do, they kind of make me feel better about myself. They've got this kind of infectious, morale-boosting personality. And I thought, you know what? I spoke to our media guy and I thought, you know what? Let's try and do something that's going to hopefully boost a little bit of morale for our supporters. And we come up with the idea and you know, we've had a couple of phone calls so far and it's gone really well. And they've been very appreciative of our time, which is obviously very minimal and to be honest, not a problem at all. But it's amazing how those 15, 20 minute, 10 minute conversations have helped and hopefully gained a few more sort of points from my perspective for the club so that we carry on getting their support.
It sounds as though you are keeping yourself very busy, Danny, in this kind of weird time that we're in at the moment. So let's talk a bit more about how it's been for you and for the players. What's been the mood like amongst the team and your coaching staff as well?
It's been a difficult one, Jules, to be honest, because obviously there's so much uncertainty about it. We're trying to put activities on. We basically implemented our off-season program early so that the players can keep themselves fit and active. We're using various apps to track their movements. We've penciled in some conference calls this week and some video calls where we're going to do some exercises together. And we nicked that one off Mourinho and Spurs because I really liked what they did then. I thought it was a good morale booster. But the questions are constantly being asked because one thing that does happen in football a lot is everybody talks to everybody. Everybody's got an opinion. Everybody's got a friend who knows a friend who knows a friend who's got the information. And they're all coming up with all these random answers of how they think the league's going to finish or not finish or be carried on. And it's trying to keep them grounded enough to be ready that if it does start, we're in a good position physically, but obviously mentally ready that it might be over and we need to start planning for next year. So we're doing the best that we can, but I'm not going to pretend it's been easy because it hasn't. And I know that obviously there's far greater things going on in the world at the moment than me planning my potential end of season or next season, but from a professional perspective, it's been difficult to try and manage that.
So, Danny, we all know how affected clubs below the top few tiers in English football are in terms of match day income, which makes up a far larger proportion of the revenue for clubs in the National League. But on the other hand, one thing that you do have in the National League is shorter contracts. I mean, is this a freedom that could possibly help you compared to, say, clubs in League One or League Two in the aftermath of all this?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we the historically in our league, most clubs' contracts will begin in June and end beginning of May, obviously with the contingency of playoffs, etc. The bigger the league's got in the sense of the type of clubs that are in the National League now, if you look at the amount of former league clubs and quite high-level league clubs that are now in there, more and more teams are giving out 2 and 3 year contracts. From our perspective, we've got quite a large proportion of players on short-term contracts, which from a financial commitment perspective, obviously works out quite nicely. However, it does cause uncertainty because if the league were to decide to carry on in May and June, theoretically, we would have to reissue contracts to our players because they would be within their right to turn around and say they don't have to play or don't want to play. I'd be shocked if they did, but there is that danger. So there's obviously two sides to the coin to that one. And I think from our perspective, we just want to know roughly what's going to happen. And then we can start A, planning if we need to finish this year, and B, start planning for next year, because there are a large number of our players that we do want to retain for the following season.
And with that in mind, Danny, how do you think that this postponement to the league will affect young players coming through the system? Will it actually be a positive or a negative thing?
I believe that will heavily depend on how much the finances of each club's affected. I mean, from my perspective, it's hurt us for our development of our young players because people would have seen that we'd started to fill the bench more with our academy lads, and the more certain we was of retaining our status in the National League, the more I wanted to blood our young players, because I believe we have some very talented lads. And so the break in the season couldn't have come at a worse time for me in the sense of giving those players opportunity. But I mean, the only other thing I would say with that, with a lot of clubs maybe being financially hit, there could be a multitude of players dropping down the level because they need to secure contracts. That's from a senior player perspective. Or B, that they might not be going for bigger players on bigger contracts and therefore have to give their young players an opportunity. And I think that'll be unique to every club. But one thing I do know is that if someone's got good young players, that they want to keep them and they want to play them.
Yeah, not to look at this opportunistically, Danny, but has that crossed your mind, the fact that even bigger clubs in your area will have to make various cuts? Those cuts tend to come from the bottom first, don't they? So in some cases that evolves academy players. Now, for clubs, not just in the National League, but in League One and League Two, a huge part of what they do and bringing young players in, not just into the first team, but into their academy, are players that are let go by academies of bigger clubs. Now, we've spoken to a few people. We spoke to Gary Lewin on here a week or two ago, and he was saying how difficult it is really for even the biggest clubs to keep their academy activities going while this hiatus is happening. Has it crossed your mind that there might be the possibility of more scholars out there who are looking to come back into senior football?
The issue with academy football, as is discussed every season, is opportunity. Every club wants to give their players the best opportunity they can to obviously develop their own and produce their own players, but also use the loan system, but even use them as market value and bring some revenue back into the club. With clubs maybe having to cut their cloth more accordingly, obviously that might mean there is an excess of players that are available now, which we have to look at. I've been on various analytical football sites today, looking at players that are going to be out of contract, trying to group them into age bands, what sort of player we want to look at. And I think as a manager, you're constantly doing that anyway, trying to, like you said, if there is an opportunity to take advantage of a situation, then you have to do so. I'm quite a positive person, so if we're going to be stuck in a house all day, I might as well use it to do as much research as I can on these players. But again, we are in limbo because we don't know what club situations are. And with the government doing the amazing work they've done financially, there are clubs now that are probably not in as bad a situation as what they probably could have been in. I'm obviously talking from the lower end of the league tables here. So we just have to wait and see. But we've got our plan A, B, C's, D's, etc. already if those players do become available.
Now, Danny, you talked about football being a small community and everyone talking around the campfire. Aldershot have come from lower divisions back up towards the EFL, having been in there many years ago. What sort of feedback have you had from colleagues in the game that work on a part-time basis? I mean, it must have been particularly tough for a lot of them, because you're looking at people in some cases who've lost not just one stream of income, but two streams of income. I mean, how are some of your colleagues in that part of the game getting on?
I mean, we try and keep in touch with as many people as you can during the season. And obviously with this break that we've had sort of enforced on us, it gives you a chance to catch up with a lot of different people that you haven't maybe spoke to for a while. And it's been really tough for them, because not only do they not know about their financial situation at their club at the minute, they don't know whether they're going to actually keep their jobs, because I know there's been some clubs already that have taken voluntary relegations and withdrawn from leagues from lower tiers in the game. And that's always in the back of their mind. And you just hope that the people that are in charge of the clubs that finance it have got enough sort of provisions in place that they can maintain, obviously, their lifestyle and also continue to fund what generally seems to be a hobby. When you get down to the lower levels for the wealthier guys, it seems to be something they like to do on the side. So the mood isn't fantastic. They're trying to keep positive. The fact that the relegation and promotions have been taken away has had kind of a double-edged sword effect, because the ones who are in the relegation zones are over the moon because they've guaranteed their status for the following season. But the ones that obviously had an opportunity to go up a level and progress, that's been quite devastating, not only for the people involved because of the effort they've put in, but also financially. I think there was sponsorship and commercial deals, because although they're smaller clubs, that still plays a massive part of their revenue and their budget. So it's been tough for them. It has been really hard.
Finally, Danny, I know this is a difficult question because this is a situation where there's so much uncertainty and the situation's constantly changing. But what ideally would you like to see happen with the rest of the National League season and the following National League season, 2021?
I'm going to work backwards if I can. With the following season, I'd like to hopefully see there not to be too much disruption at all. I understand that potentially there is going to be a delay in the start of that season, but I'd like to see it start close to the sort of original date in August as possible, because I understand everyone's sort of dilemma with this year. But if we do decide to start this or restart this season later on in the year, and that then knocks on to the following season, I think it's going to make it even more difficult to get back to normality. With regards to finishing this year, I'm not sure the best way, in the sense of completing games, whether they do a real festival of football, I think Gary Neville come up with, where it's a real short period of time and we all play behind closed doors. And I know from a revenue perspective, that wouldn't be great for clubs, but I think from a finishing the season perspective, that's probably the only way they could potentially do it. I'd like to see the teams that deserve promotion get promotion. That would be my ideal situation, because I know as a manager that we've been up against it most of the season and fighting. And if they were to make the season null and void, it kind of tarnishes the work and the progress we've made. And even though we're not in a position to get in the playoffs or go up, what we've done this year for our club has been an achievement. So I would like to see them to be able to do it in a way where the stats around the games, the actual data is recognised, is remembered, and it does go on record. Because, as I said, there's been a lot of work gone in from clubs, whether you're at the top of the league or the bottom of the league, and it would be a real shame if that was just diminished. So I know I've probably avoided the question quite diplomatically, but For me, I'd like to see him finish it in some way possible, and with that resulting in promotions.
Danny Searle there, Aldershot manager, and thanks a lot to him for joining us again. It was fascinating, Jules, and the end bit of that, there are so many different ideas for finishing the season, aren't there? But I think hopefully our listeners have got a bit more of a flavour now of exactly how devastating it can be further down when you've got match day income. Like, there's so much talk about television money, especially at the top of the European game, and how that could affect teams going forward. But even though football is televised at national league level, match day income makes up such a greater part of a club's income at that level. And it's super difficult to plan ahead in that sort of situation, this sort of situation.
Yeah, and it's just, like you say, it was fascinating to hear personally how Danny's been coping with it and how he's been coaching the team still and staying in touch with everyone and the different methods that they're applying. Because in this situation, no one's prepared for it. No one was expecting this to happen. So everyone's having to kind of improvise and just kind of make it up as they go along, which is why a lot of the time Danny was sort of unable to kind of give opinions on certain things, because he was like, you know, this is the first time we're in this situation. It's hard to say. The thing that I found really interesting, though, is what Danny's take was on the impact the coronavirus pandemic will potentially have on young players. You know, he talked about the fact that he started gradually filling his bench with more youngsters that were hungry for opportunity, and he wanted to kind of start getting them into the team more. The closer that they were getting to safety was probably the more likely that these young players were going to get given their chance to play in the first team. But because of financial hits, what I can take from what Danny said is he reckons that some teams might be more likely to buy younger players instead of spending big on the more experienced players. So teams might be more likely to recall youngsters that are on loan instead of buying in those more experienced, expensive players. What's your take on that, Andy?
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. And obviously, Danny is, as best he can in this scenario of flux, trying to find a way to prepare for next season, and trying to compose his squad for next season. And I do believe there is the possibility, as well as we mentioned there, of maybe there being younger players from bigger clubs who will get let go and maybe be available to them, because this is always something that a club like Aldershot would try to make the most of, just like, say, Wimbledon would take rejects from Crystal Palace and Chelsea and clubs like that. But I do fear a little bit for youth development at that level, because we've seen, you know, we touched on a number of occasions with Danny about, you know, how you could draw parallels even with League One and League Two clubs. And some of those, like we've seen Wickham Wanderers, for example, who've been doing very well in League One, they relatively recently got rid of their youth team. I think partly because of the EPPP, which restricts the amount of compensation that the lower division teams can get for their players that they've developed. And you know, I know a lot of clubs outside the top flight have looked at that and thought, well, how much can we really justify putting into developing players if top teams who want to get players younger and younger, you know, that is a huge part of it for them, and has been for a number of years now, the elite teams. You know, how much do you want to put into developing players that the elite teams can just come and nick for next to nothing? And that, for me, has been a worrying trend in particularly English football for a very long time now, because I think however well run your team in League One, League Two, or the National League is going to be, you still need that possibility, especially if you're going to put efforts, time and money into developing young players. The prospect of being able to sell them on at some point and add a little bit to the budget, just like you would add a little bit to budget for a good cup run or whatever, that's something that's absolutely invaluable to a team at that level, and a season changer, if not changer of the financial fortunes of a club for a couple of years.
Yeah, and I think that as well, speaking to Danny, one thing that was very clear is that he's making the most of this time that he's got to kind of plan for the future, as you say there, Andy, and also doing lots of positive things as well. I loved what he told us about sort of speaking to his parents on the phone and how that inspired him to set up this system where fans can actually get in touch with the club and they can get, you know, a player or the manager, Danny himself, to actually give them a call if they're feeling lonely and isolated and just need a bit of a pick-me-up, because it is a strange time and we all need those things right now that can just put a smile on our face. And on last week's Jules and Andy, we talked about some of the great things that some non-league clubs are doing in their community to sort of raise money and do good for their fans and supporters as well. And I just wanted to mention something that's developed in the last week. A couple of my friends in Brighton who both play for non-league clubs have set up an amazing campaign, which has really taken off and I'm absolutely chuffed for them. And they've set up Run 5K for NHS, which is a brilliant campaign to raise money for the NHS in Sussex. And they're starting to develop that to spread across the country as well now, because it really has taken off. And they set a target of £3,000 to raise for however long it would take. And they smashed that target in less than 24 hours, which is incredible. And it's now been going for just over a week and they've raised nearly 20 grand for the NHS, which is just incredible. Just two lads who play non-league football. And they obviously all want to keep fit. So they started it off as a football community thing where they were getting their teammates and players from other non-league clubs around the county to run a 5K, post a photo on Instagram or Twitter, and basically donate to the NHS through their Just Giving page. And all of a sudden, this has just spread a lot further now. And it's just been amazing to see so many ex-pros get involved as well. So I know Stephen Warnock did it this week. Karen Carney did it. Kerry Mayo, who used to play for Brighton, has done it. There's been loads of people involved. Russell Martin did his 5K run as well. So it's been really good to see so many people, not just in Sussex, but around the country getting involved in the campaign. And if you want to do it as well, then please do get involved. It's at Run 5K for NHS if you want to take part. All you got to do is go for your 5K run, take a picture, upload it to Instagram or Twitter and hashtag the guys in, hashtag Run5K for NHS. And the most important bit, of course, is to make sure you donate through the Just Giving page. But yeah, lots of great stuff and loads more good stories like that that we're hearing every single day, raising money for the amazing work that our NHS heroes are doing right now.
You know what? I'm allowed out of quarantine on Thursday. You've given me a little idea for my first trip out.
Please, can you? You really should do that. It will be amazing. Yeah, it's just been so nice seeing all these photos come through. And it's just incredible to see how quickly it's grown as well. Because as I said, they only set out to raise £3,000. And now they're, you know, nearly at £20,000 in just over a week. So it's quite amazing.
It's incredible.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Your correspondence, we love it. We always love it. You can always join us, of course, at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. I don't know why I'm saying this, because you do. Well, I'm saying it because I want more of you to do it, because it's fantastic.
We want more of you to get in touch.
We absolutely. It's something that really makes our week, actually. We've got one from Fraser Little here. Says, hi Jules and Andy, first off need to say thanks. Having listened to every one of your pods this season, the quality has never dipped. Well, thank you very much, Fraser. I'm sure you will speak about the current call for Premier League players to take a wage cut. Do you feel like footballers are being made into scapegoats? Has this occurred to take the heat off owners of clubs using the furlough scheme? And finally, a shout out to all clubs paying administrative match day staff and all players already contributing resources to the current crisis. We should say, actually, we didn't mention earlier, Manchester United have said all along, we will continue to pay our staff 100%, our non-playing staff, without recourse to any sort of government scheme, which I think is something that has to be applauded, because Manchester United have been criticised for the way they've been run on a number of occasions, but here they've come through and done something absolutely fantastic. I do feel that the pressure has been put on footballers a little bit unfairly at times. Of course, people want to see them contribute, but I heard Jose Font actually talking about it from a Ligue 1 perspective on BBC World Service yesterday, and he was making a quite reasonable point that, you know, it's not really about a whole squad taking a 30% cut or a 25% cut or whatever. There's a lot of legalese that needs to be waded through. And when you bear in mind, for example, in his position, there'll be a senior player like him who's one of the highest earners, and then you'll be someone who's just got into the first team and a teenager and has just signed their first professional contract. And should they be expected to give up the same proportion of their wages? The thing is, people want to see action now, and I understand that, but it's more complicated than that. And I think because footballers are generally thought of as so incredibly wealthy, and in a lot of cases are, especially in the Premier League, I think we can sometimes forget that their means and their financial obligations do vary. And of course, they're unionized, which is why they should be striving to do something together. But I think for them to want to do that, on one hand, people want them to make the first step forward, and yet on the other hand, they want the clubs to put their foot down and say, right, you all have to take a 30% cut, or you all have to take a 35% cut, which are totally different concepts.
I think as well, at the moment, it's really important to point out that just because something hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it's not going to eventually happen. And exactly. I think with everything right now, this hasn't happened before. So no one has a timescale of, oh, well, this should have happened after 2 weeks, or this should have happened after 7 days. We just don't know. And I think that, you know, we need to kind of give everything a bit of time here, because everything is developing and some things take longer than other things to be put in place. So I think that's just really important to point out. There've been another couple of really good questions that have come through on Twitter as well. Jack Fuzz has tweeted and asked, in light of COVID-19, will academy players begin to consider alternative careers. And kind of along the same lines, Jamie Warwick has also tweeted a question asking whether we think there are any provisions that the Premier League and other leagues could put in case a Corona-style event were to happen again in the future, or is fixture congestion prohibitive? What do you think?
I think the fixture congestion point is really important, because ever since the start of this crisis, and I'm sure we've mentioned this before or elsewhere on Football Ramble Daily, is the moment that there were questions over Champions League fixtures and the viability of them, there was almost a bit of a mini panic. And it's because there is no space to put anything else. Yeah. And so I think that's a very good point. And everything's ground to a halt simply because it's had to. You know, real life events overtook sporting events, and sport simply had to fall in line with it, where sometimes it feels as if sport is bending real life timetables to its will, which is obviously not the case in this situation. In terms of provision being made for this in the future, I think we're seeing that already. We're seeing the talk in Portugal, for example, of some sort of central fund being established to cover for events like this in future. I think we'll see it written into a lot more TV contracts, because the fact that the Belgian league came out last week and stated their intention to finish the league as it was 29 games in to a 30 games regular season before the start of the playoffs and just get rid of all that, they're able to do that simply because there's a force majeure clause in the contract, in which the clubs don't lose out financially and the broadcasters are adequately compensated by insurance as well. So I think a lot of football authorities and leagues have been criticised for putting the needs of football ahead of the needs of the world in general. But as we've consistently said here, you know, football, we have to have some football to come back to at some point, and people want that. So I think even though it seems unpalatable to many, you know, the governors of the game do have to work on some sort of solution to cover themselves later down the line. And I think fulfilling TV contracts as best they can does fall into a part of that, doesn't it? Because, you know, you look at, I don't know, say you look at the Bundesliga or the Premier League or somewhere like that, you're talking about an industry where you've got anywhere between 60 and 80,000 non-playing staff in the clubs in general, who are reliant, going back to our point at the beginning, on football for their living. You know, we want to try and mitigate the economic impact, not just in football, but in all parts of life, of the way this virus has made everything come to a standstill. So I think we have to appreciate that as well.
Yeah, and look, like we're all desperate for football to come back. It's something that we're all missing as part of our lives. And as soon as it's health and safe to do that, then I'm sure there'll be a lot of us just jumping for joy that we can watch it again. And that brings me on to Shovel James on Twitter, who has sent in this question. He said, "Guys, what have you been indulging in football related to fill the infinite void left by this interruption? James says, I've fallen to watching classic matches whilst on the exercise bike and playing a bit of Pro Evo soccer, but it's still not scratching the itch." Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, James. I have started Sunderland Till I Die, the second series, and I'm about 3 or 4 episodes in, and like you say, it's barely scratching the itch, but it's just so good to kind of get sucked in and actually just be taken back to a time where stadiums were full of fans and seeing that passion. And obviously the Sunderland story is just incredible, isn't it, Andy? So to kind of go back and relive what happened last season is, it's quite amazing and definitely just makes me want football back even more.
I wanted to go into this mail as well, Jules, that we got from Robert Purnell, which says, "Hello, Jules and Andy. You were discussing the possibility of the Premier League players being locked away for a period of time to complete the remaining games of the season in a central location and the negative mental health implications this may have. This was a great point and one which I can sympathise with. I'm currently working from our flat in East London to help run our business, which supports some of the essential services. My wife and 3-year-old son are staying in the southwest with family, as my wife is pregnant and there are fewer cases of the virus in that area. when they first left, I was hit with a wave of anxiety, which I'm having to manage every day. The stresses of this awful situation, the constant news, pressures of keeping our business running and our employees safe, alongside wanting to care for my family, supporting them where possible, and worrying about their well-being is certainly taking its toll on my mental health. The amount that players earn should not be a reason to discount their mental health. They're human with families and subject to all the stresses the rest of the population feel. We love the Premier League, but no competition should be bigger than the players who make the game great. Well, thanks for that, Robert. We really appreciate that. And we hope you're feeling good and that you're managing to get through it, and your family are too.
Yeah, Robert, thank you so much for that email. And we really do hope that you're doing okay. And hopefully listening to this podcast every week is keeping you a bit of company, because that's what we're here for. And as always, we love you guys getting in touch. So please continue to do that at Jules Breach and at Andy Brussel on Twitter, at Football Ramble. And of course, you can email us every single week, whenever you want. And hopefully we'll get to your email at some stage, Jules and Andy at footballrambledaily.com. Just a quick one, just to let you guys know, if you've listened to Jim Campbell's Fantasy Five Aside and you love it, or perhaps you've never listened to it before, why not give it a go tomorrow? Because I recorded my Fantasy Five Aside with Jim, and it's a bit bonkers, Andy. It's a bit weird. I'm not going to lie. There's a few unpredictable ones in there, but we had such a laugh recording it. So give it a go. It's going to be on all the usual feeds that you find your podcasts on. So the same Football Ramble Daily feed. So whether you listen to this on Acast or whatever other platform you use for your podcasts, make sure you give that a go tomorrow. It's my Fantasy Five Aside with a few surprises. Let's just say that.
Well, Jules, I'm very much hoping that Paul Staveley's question will get sort of semi-answered on there. He's tweeted, if a Brighton and Wimbledon all-time Dream 11 played each other, who would win? Actually, scrub that. We know the answer, don't we? It's going to be the Wimbledon all-time 11. The only question really is, do you go with Hartson or Fashanu?
You can't ask me that because I work with Hartson.
Your answer then.
There you go. There we go. That's what I've picked. Thanks everyone for getting in touch as always. Don't forget to listen to Five Aside tomorrow. And Andy and I will be back same time, same place next week. Have a good one, mate.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, mate.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know.
And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today.